Do religious accounts like the Bible talk about near-death experiences? That's the topic today on Mind Matters News.
Welcome to Mind Matters News, where artificial and natural intelligence meet head-on. Here's your host, Robert J. Marks.
Greetings. Our guest today is Dr. Walter Bradley, who needs no introduction. He's the namesake for the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence. Dr. Bradley, welcome.
Thanks, Bob. It's good to be here.
We have been talking about John Burke's Imagine Heaven book and how you helped review it. And you're one of the endorsers. Now, I listened to it. And the print copy, you're there as one of the endorsers. Okay. Yeah. Burke also has a series of six videos on YouTube related to this book. They include direct interviews with some who've experienced near-death experiences, and watching them is an emotional experience you can't get from reading what you can get from watching some of these videos. And we'll provide links to the videos in the podcast notes. We've been talking about near-death experiences and a number of different anecdotes. We've talked about the common denominators, that there are certain regularities in the experience of near-death experiences that really give them a semblance of truth. There are also some interesting specific anecdotes on this. And Dr. Burke, when he chose these people, chose disinterested people who didn't have any skin in the game. They were not seeking money. They were not seeking fame. They were just telling the truth as it is. So, Dr. Bradley, let's talk about that a little bit before we get to the accounts of near-death experience in the Bible. There was a drowned physician, and she was also on Burke's YouTube video. Could you tell us a story about that? That's an incredible story.
The physician that Bob, you're talking about, was the director of spinal research at University of Southern California Medical School, a very prominent person in her field and at a very prestigious university. She was on a kayaking trip with her husband, and she went over a steep waterfall. This is in Peru. And her kayak went underwater when it landed at the bottom of the falls and got stuck underwater. And then she was trapped and could not get out of the kayak. So she was actually underwater for 10 to 15 minutes. And so she has a remarkable story of what happened to her during that time period, in which she did experience her body's dying and her spirit, her soul, being liberated from that and having this wonderful opportunity to go to what I'll call the front porch of heaven, to meet relatives who had previously died. She had like a party of people to welcome her there. She had an opportunity to talk to Jesus and to experience a life review in which she was able, in what seemed like an instant of time, to see her whole life in panoramic view, see the things that she'd done that had been for good, the things that she had done that had hurt other people, and how that also rippled down. She tells this story in a remarkable way. When she was in the process of dying for lack of water, for lack of air, she tells that in great detail, as a physician would. She could kind of picture what was going on in her body because she knew the physiology. And hearing her tell it in light, it was obviously for her a remarkable life-changing experience. She's now written two different books on this, speaks all over the country on it. She can tell it in a way that maybe the average layperson couldn't, because they don't know all of the medical, things that were transpiring while she was going through this whole process. But hearing those kind of testimonies is very, very compelling. And six that you mentioned are all people that are in different ways outstanding witnesses, if I can use that term, who have had near-death experiences.
A couple of things. Number one, she hesitated, if I recall right, to believe what she experienced because something she was told about her son.
She did not want to believe that this was a real experience, that it was some kind of a hallucination or some other manifestation, because one of the things Jesus told her was coming was that her son would be die tragically in an accident in the future. And she didn't want to believe that was true. And so she felt like if that's not true, then this prophetic word that she had would not come to pass. And as it turned out, it subsequently did. Several years later, her son did die tragically in an accident when he was in his 20s.
My goodness. The other thing you mentioned was the life review. That seems to be another very dominant common denominator on these near-death experiences. You always hear of people facing death and their life flash before their eyes.
Yeah, that's pretty common.
That experience is actually something which happened in these near-death experiences, and it happened to this physician also. Mm-hmm. What happens in this life review?
I think that people get to see their life, and somehow in the world that she's in as a spirit, time doesn't pass in the same way. So she has her whole life review, and it seems like it happened in an instant, but it also was very accessible to understand what was being said and or what was being told. And in that, she saw in great detail the good things that she had done and how those rippled down. She may have helped somebody who was very down and depressed or whatever, and they recovered from that, and then they helped other people. And she could see that whatever happens, we just see the first step in that, and we don't see the ripple-down effect. Same thing when we've done something bad that's hurt people, and maybe it's hurt them in a way that continues through the rest of their life, and maybe they hurt other people. And she said seeing that was life-changing, because we often think the little either good things or bad things that we do aren't that consequential. But when you see the effect over 10 generations to this person, to that person, she says it's life-changing because it makes you realize everything we do is significant in a way that causes you to want to live more carefully and to be more thoughtful and more kind.
The thing I remember is that there was never any accolades concerning your latest promotion, how you did on your job, your accomplishments on earth, that none of those were really addressed in this life review as being significant.
One of the guys that's interviewed in the book actually complained when he was having his life review that, but I've got this big award in Kentucky for being a sculptor and so forth and so on. And that was never even mentioned. And he said, it was really very distressing to me because all the things I thought were so important didn't even show up in the life review. They weren't panned as being bad. They just were ignored. And he said, that tells you something really important.
Wow. That's fascinating. Okay, another couple quick anecdotes. Tell us the story of where are my dentures?
Oh, this is a great story. So this guy is sent to the emergency room. He died on the table. Because he had dentures, they're trying to resuscitate him, and the dentures are in the way, so they pull the dentures out. Well, they got to put them someplace, so there's a little stand on wheels with several drawers, and they throw it into one of those drawers and shut it. Turns out that he didn't regain consciousness. They resuscitated him, but he did not regain consciousness for 7 days. By this time, he's already someplace in the hospital, probably intensive care or whatever. And so when he comes, when he becomes conscious, the first thing he wants to know is, well, where are my dentures? Now, the people who are taking care of him now have no idea where his denture was. They weren't the people that took him out. And they say, we have no idea where your dentures are. And he said, well, I can tell you where they are. And he explains, it describes a little stand on wheels, and it's in the third drawer, and it's in the operating room. And so somebody thinking, this guy's nuts, but we'll go over and check it out. And sure enough, there it was.
Did he see them put it in his dentures in the drawer in an out-of-body experience?
He did, because he was already clinically dead.
Wow.
He's on the table, and they're trying to resuscitate him. Now, he's seeing what's going on because he has had this out-of-body experience, and he could tell you exactly where they were. And when the person found them, they were quite surprised because they knew that this was while he was clinically dead that they'd taken him out.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
One more. This is also an out-of-body experience. It's a story about the shoes on the roof.
Oh, there's a lady who's actually a migrant worker. In some capacity, I don't remember the details, she had an accident, and she basically experienced clinical death. And during that clinical death, she had the out-of-body experience. And these people with out-of-body experiences, they don't always stay the whole time in the operating room or the emergency room, they can actually go someplace else. And that's how they get to the front porch of heaven, but they also can go around in the hospital. So she goes around and she sees this tennis shoe. It's not hers, but there's a tennis shoe on the third or fourth floor of the hospital on a ledge where you can't see it from the ground. And you really can't see it from the room, from the windows very easily because it's 3 or 4 feet away from a window. So you couldn't easily see it unless you were really looking hard for it. And nobody would be looking hard for anything in that place. So when she tells about her near-death out-of-body experience, the physicians are all very skeptical, this little migrant lady, and so they don't know what to think. But she tells us, she said, if you don't believe me, then go over to the fourth floor of the hotel in the northeast corner and stick your head out the window and you'll see a tennis shoe that's multicolored with shoe strings that are very different colors as well. And it's just one and it's very odd. Okay, nobody believed it. But they thought, let's go look. So one of them goes around and looks and lo and behold, exactly what she described. And she could not have described it except she was flying by, you know. So again, one of those interesting examples of people seeing things and being able to recount them in a way that is very compelling.
That's amazing. Now, we've talked a lot about near-death experiences and people experience what you call the front porch of heaven. Any of them go to hell?
I think for me, if nobody ever mentioned anything about hell, I would be suspicious about what is this, you know, new dimension of existence. But it turns out that 27% of people who have had these near-death out-of-body experiences have a going-to-hell experience. 27%. Now, we know that number has to be much greater because, first of all, many people don't want to talk about it, okay? They don't want to think about it. It was a hellish experience, right? Maybe it literally scared the hell out of them. But so the real number is certainly larger than that. And one of the ways that physicians know this now, there's a lot of them that are interested in this topic, is that people, while they're being resuscitated, will often, when they come back to consciousness momentarily, and they're saying, help me, they're coming to get me, they're coming to get me. And then their heart stops beating again, and they go back into that quote, clinical death. And they may come in and out multiple times. And so they're, in some cases, telling these hellish experiences that they're having, and then they go back and they come back to consciousness temporarily, and they tell. And it's you don't know what to make about that. So the doctors, when the patients finally are resuscitated and stay resuscitated, maybe later after they've had a chance to recover, they ask them, what was that all about? Because you were saying they're coming to get me, they're coming to get me, and so forth. And in many cases, they have no clue what the doctors are talking about.
So the physicians heard this plea to help them stay away from hell.
Yeah. And it's not.
Yeah, they forgot about it.
Yeah. Well, it's not more than forgetting. When you have a very traumatic experience, it often is buried in your subconscious as a way of coping. That can happen in, you know, not even just in near-death experiences, but when you have really dramatic or traumatic things happen, people often don't remember them because the mind as a coping knows this is too traumatic. And so I think what they have concluded is that people who have these experiences, sometimes it's so traumatic they don't remember them, even though they talked about it in a significant way while they're on the operating table. So, and that makes sense.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Okay, change of topic. Who was, and I hope I'm saying the name right, Akion Kramerik?
This is an amazing story of a young girl. Her parents are Russian atheists who immigrated to the United States. They lived in a rural area in Idaho in the woods. They had a daughter. She never went to school. They did homeschooling. She had no contact with religion at all, formally or informally, because her parents were atheists and they lived out in the woods someplace. And then she began to have these visions. And in those visions, Jesus came to her and and begin to speak to her and to also maybe give her special gifts of painting and stuff. So at a very early age, when she was 2 or 3 years old, she was painting things that were very remarkable.
She was a savant, if I remember.
Yeah, savant is the right term. Yeah, remarkable for her age. And she'd had no training. She'd had no encouragement. It was just she had this gift. And all of a sudden, she began to use it. Well, by the time she was 8 years old, she was painting at the level of some of our most famous painters, artists in all history. And she could paint people, and they would look absolutely as if it was almost like a camera. She was that good. Well, one day she'd seen Jesus a bunch of times in these visions that she's had that were Jesus coming to her, obviously because she was somebody special. He was going to bless the world through. And Jesus told her, or she just did it on her own initiative, painted a picture of him.
That's going to dovetail with the next story.
Okay.
Right. And the next story is the book Heaven is for Real. This was actually made into a movie,
yeah,
which a lot of people have seen. I have not seen the movie. I have listened to the book. But the book is about a small boy named Colton Burpo, who had a near-death experience. He was just a little kid, and he claimed he went to heaven and met Jesus. There's an incredible story about Colton's near-death experience, which dovetails with Akian Kramerik's painting. Could you relate that?
Yeah, these are those kind of coincidences that make this even more compelling. We've got lots of evidence. When he came back, said that he'd actually met Jesus.
When he came back from his near-death experience, it was an appendectomy or something.
Yeah. So people are asking him, well, what does Jesus look like? And they're showing many, many pictures. Everybody can find a picture of Jesus. A lot of people have painted sort of hypothetical pictures of what Jesus looks like. And he looks and he looks and he never sees any of these pictures as being what Jesus looked like. So they finally give up finding a picture that looks like Jesus. And one day he's just at a Christian bookstore with his dad walking through. And he takes a turn. He goes, and he's like 7 or 8 years old now. Dad, that's what Jesus looks like. His dad was sort of incredulous. And he said, well, he went to the person who ran the Christian bookstore and said, whose picture is this and where did it come from? And then the guy who runs the bookstore said, oh, it's a remarkable story. this young A little girl from Russia with two atheist parents said she was having visions of Jesus, and she painted this picture and said, that's what Jesus looks like. And the father said, wow, that's remarkable.
Because, that is amazing.
Because my son had a near-death experience in which he saw Jesus, and we've shown him hundreds of pictures. And the first time he saw this one, he said, that's what Jesus looks like. Now, there's no way you can fake that. These two kids have never met each other. The families lived 1,000 miles apart. And the coincidence came through her painting this picture of Jesus, who she had seen in her visions or in his visitations, I'm not sure which. And then it shows up in a bookstore for somebody to identify who has seen Jesus because of their near-death experience.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's a remarkable story. And there are so many things like this that it seems to me that you have to be totally don't confuse me with the facts. My faith is made up atheist to dismiss all of this. I think God's doing something special in our time to give us lots and lots of compelling evidence as the world, including the United States, gets more and more secular, gets more and more skeptical, belief in God's becoming less and less intellectually acceptable in some circles. And I think God's really putting the evidence out there in a big, big way so that people will not be able to say, well, I never knew there wasn't any good evidence. No, I think that argument's been dismissed.
Exactly. By the way, if you Google Jesus paintings and you do a search on images, one of the major hits is Akian Kramerik's portrait of Jesus.
I would recommend that you buy this picture and keep it wherever you like to have your prayer time.
Well, I know
because
that
it's fun to pray to a Jesus with a face. Okay, we can talk. I take my little one out of my billfold when I'm walking, and we just have this surreal serious conversation.
You have a picture in your office, and plus we were talking about this before our recording, and you pulled out of your wallet a little picture that this Ecce and Chimerica had written.
I'm a visual person, so I like to be able to see Jesus when I'm talking to him.
Personal story, I met a woman at a small group meeting a few weeks ago who had a near-death experience, and she maintained that it changed her life. I asked her, did you meet God or Jesus or anything? She says, yes, I did. I started to ask her, is it the same as in the pain? And before I got the sentence out, she says, yes, it was. It was exactly as depicted in the painting, which is just gives you kind of chills. Last topic, near-death experience in the Bible. The Apostle Paul wrote much of the New Testament, but there is historical evidence that Paul had a near-death experience that he actually describes in the Bible. What happened there?
Yeah, this is really interesting. If you look at 2 Corinthians chapter 12, Paul is describing this remarkable experience where he said, I went to third heaven and I had experiences that were so remarkable that I really can't describe them.
Just like all of the anecdotes about the near-death experience, it was indescribable,
he said. And it's because he was seeing and experiencing things that don't exist on earth, and so there aren't any words for them, and so forth. But he talks about this near-death. He says, I went to third heaven and had all these amazing things happen. So then you say, well, maybe Paul had a near-death experience. Is that reasonable? In the book of Acts, it's very reasonable. There are several places, one in particular, where he was stoned to death for preaching the gospel and making the Jews angry. They drug him out of the city walls and left him for dead. And then he came back to life and went back into the city.
It's hard to keep a good man down, I guess, right?
Stoned and left for dead. And there are several other places. Paul, you know, not everything that happened to Paul is recorded in the Bible because the Bible would be way too long. But there's almost no doubt given he was always out preaching and being challenged and so forth. And it's nice that I think it's like in Acts 14 or 15, they talk about this specific example. The other thing I appreciate about Paul is he talks about in Philippians chapter 1, he says, I long to go to heaven, but I have unfinished work here. And then he makes the comment, he said, I just want to go to be with Jesus. Of course, he's met Jesus. He also had an experience of encountering Jesus, not a near-death one.
Well, that's another common denominator for people that have had near-death experiences. They don't want to come back.
Yeah.
They want to stay where they're at. And Paul was relating to that.
Yeah. He says to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. Yeah. And when people say, well, when we die, your body is just dead, and then when Christ comes again, you'll be resurrected. But people fail to realize that there's two different stories in the Bible, and people get them conflated, and then it causes a lot of confusion. The Revelations talks about what happens when Christ comes again at the end of human history. And it talks about people are going to have resurrected bodies, we're going to have a new heaven, we're going to have a new earth, and so forth. That happens. But that's not what John Burke's talking about in his book. And it's not what near-death experiences are about. Near-death experiences are about what happens now. If I die tomorrow, what happens to me? I know what happens at the end of time. My old physical body, in whatever crummy condition will be in by then, will be resurrected, okay? And I'll get a new body, and we'll have a new heaven and a new earth and so forth. But I think the near-death experiences are talking about what can happen immediately. If we die physically, then what we're talking about in near-death experiences will be our experience. Except if we're not resuscitated, then we'll continue to exist and have consciousness and be able to do many of the things that we would do with a physical body, embodied spirit. But between now, if I die tomorrow and Christ comes again, I'm going to have a spirit body, and that spirit body is going to be able to do all the things I can do, but it's going to be able to do a bunch of other things. And I'll get to live with Jesus in what's called intermediate heaven. And I like the term intermediate heaven.
Is that what Paul calls third heaven?
Well, Paul calls third heaven, he was just referring to this experience, and it's probably, he didn't know how to even describe it with words.
Well, I think that near-death experiences are certainly encouraging to people of faith about the afterlife.
Yeah.
And
it makes me look forward.
It really does. It is encouraging. After reading the book, I thought, I want a near-death experience.
Yeah, or I just, or I'm not afraid to die,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. That's better said than I did it.
If you think this life is going to be good, the next one's going to be actually a lot better.
It's going to be a lot better, yeah. Yes. And it certainly, I think, is evidential, more than anecdotal, to the mind-body debate.
There are so, if you read, there must be 40 books out there right now. Burks is the best one. It sold 500,000 copies in the first 2 months.
Wow.
He was interviewed on national television 4 times. And I think that it is a remarkable compilation of what is a very, very remarkable story. But there are lots and lots of other books as well. And when you really get into this, the more you read, the more you go, wow, you know, I think it's very compelling.
It's astonishing. We're going to be providing on the podcast notes links to both Dr. Burks' books. You can get them on Kindle, or I listen to it on Audible. And also the videos, a sequence of 6 videos, which mm-hmm. I think are much, the book is incredibly compelling, but watching the videos, it speaks to the heart because it's yeah. more of an interaction with these people
yeah.
and watching their emotional response and just the passion that they bring to the talking about their near-death experience.
Let me mention something real quick.
Sure.
About, we invited a bunch of our neighbors to come over and see the series at our house.
The videos on yeah. YouTube.
Some were Christians, some were not. And we told them to come to one, and if they didn't find it interesting, don't feel obliged to come back. So we ended up inviting 6 couples. We were going to invite 12 and hope 6 would come. So all of them came. And almost all of them, with a couple of exceptions, stayed for the whole 6 weeks. Halfway through, we began to get calls from strangers that we didn't know. They said, are you going to do this series that you're doing in your home again? Because I've been hearing about it, and I really would love to come. And we ended up getting about 15 more people who we don't even know who wanted to come.
You have a big house, but not that big.
So then, then we did another. Well, they came for a different series.
Oh, I see. So you did it more than once.
We did it a second time. Because once we were halfway through, we thought when people would call, we didn't have space. But we said, if we do it again, we'll contact you. Then that group, as they were going through it, were telling their friends about it, and not necessarily Christians. And we got more calls from people who said, are you going to do this series that you've been doing at your house? And we ended up doing it 4 times.
My goodness.
Yeah.
We have been talking to Dr. Walter Bradley about near-death experiences, how it impacts the debate on the mind-body problem. And it's just been an engaging conversation. Thank you, Walter.
It's my pleasure.
Okay, so that wraps it up for this Mind Matters News. Until next time, be of good cheer.
This has been Mind Matters News with your host, Robert J. Marks. Explore more at mindmatters.ai. That's mindmatters.ai. Mind Matters News is directed and edited by Austin Egbert. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers. Mind Matters News is produced and copyrighted by the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence at Discovery Institute.
All my life, I've wanted to be a radio star.
You did.
Finally. You know, I got my first experience doing acting at Easter this year when they had a play on the Last Supper. I was Doubting Thomas.
And hey, send me that picture and we'll use it on the podcast notes.
I have it. Yeah. You can say so that you might want to see the guy that's being interviewed. Well, here he is. He only dresses this way to get free soda waters.
Oh, does that happen? Oh, that did happen to you, didn't it? You went into
the end of skiing one day. I went into in March and went into one of the places and said, I got myself soda water. I went over to the counter. I said, how much do I owe you? And she said, oh, it's okay, honey. You can have it. And I said, no, it's all right. I have a dollar. And she said, well, you keep your dollar and have a nice day.
Oh, my gosh. Because you were all dressed up like a hobo.
It didn't dawn on me. you know, you forget that you look like, you know, I walked outside before I realized she thought I was a homeless person. And that's why she was trying to be kind to me.